right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. After the Trump administration declassified sensitive information, the U.S. House Intelligence Committee released a memo that outlines allegations by Republicans that FBI investigators abused their powers in a probe of their Russian meddling during the 2016 presidential elections.
President Trump agreed to declassify the Republican memo over the objections of both the Justice Department and the FBI. Trump said in a tweet that allegations in the memo showed that top law enforcement officials politicized the Russia probe. The Republican memo alleges that the decision to put Trump campaign associate Carter Page under surveillance was largely based on information gathered by a source funded by Democrats. For their part, Democrats condemned the release of the memo and said Republicans had selected certain facts in a bid to help the president and undermine the Russia probe led by special counsel Robert Mueller. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
In an effort to deter nuclear attacks, the Pentagon has released its 2018 Nuclear Posture Review, which showcases its nuclear capabilities' current arsenal. U.S. President Donald Trump said he ordered Defense Secretary Jim Mattis to conduct the Nuclear Posture Review within days of taking office last year. The man said to have sold hundreds of rounds of ammunition to the gunman responsible for shooting 58 people from a Las Vegas hotel window has been charged. Douglas Haig of Mesa, Arizona, now faces conspiracy to make and sell armor-piercing ammunition without a license, which carries a maximum penalty of 5 years in prison and a fine. Police say that they found his fingerprints on ammunition in the hotel room of Las Vegas gunman Stephen Paddock. This is VOA News. North Korea is said to have generated about $200 million in just 9 months last year by exporting banned commodities, which is a breach of United Nations sanctions. The report also details evidence of North Korea's ongoing military cooperation with Syria and Myanmar to develop ballistic missile and chemical weapons programs. A UN panel of experts presented the report to the Security Council detailing Pyongyang's flouting of the sanctions by exporting petroleum, coal, iron, steel, and other commodities. U.S. President Trump spoke in the Oval Office Friday with a group of North Koreans who had escaped. Those defectors thanked Mr. Trump for highlighting North Korean human rights abuses. The president told the defectors and reporters he had just spoken with key Asian leaders regarding North Korea.
Before we start, I just had a phone call with the president of South Korea, President Moon, and they are in dialogue, at least as it concerns the Olympics, and that's a good thing, not a bad thing. And we had a great call. I also spoke to Prime Minister Abe of Japan, and we also had a very good call. So it's a very tricky situation. We're going to find out how it goes, but we think the Olympics will go very nicely, and after that, who knows? We'll find out. We're going to find out pretty soon, I suspect.
A state of war has technically persisted on the Korean Peninsula since 1953 when the armies of China and North Korea signed an armistice with the United States and United Nations Command, which has defended the South during a three-year war. Australia wants to sell more of its military technology and hardware, including armored vehicles and surveillance systems. Currently sells about $1.6 billion worth of weapons each year and is ranked 20th in global list of arms exporters.
Australian Minister for Defence Industry Christopher Pyne says the plan could create tens of thousands of jobs. He says it will also boost international peacekeeping efforts.
Our primary market is New Zealand, Canada, the UK and the United States. That is where the vast majority of our effort will be placed and has been placed. We need a strong alliances with those kinds of countries with the capabilities that we need militarily to ensure that we maintain peace in the world. I don't think anybody would question our role in places like Iraq and Syria most recently.
The plan has been anticipated since mid-2017, when Pyne said he wanted to sell more Australian-made weapons overseas.
That's Phil Mercer reporting for VOA in Sydney, Australia. The United Nations is implementing new steps to protect its staff from sexual harassment in the workplace and hold perpetrators accountable. The organization announced the new initiative in the wake of growing international movements to hold accountable perpetrators. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
Decided that those that he decided to move are moved, and there is not much I can tell us to talk about on that one.
Namibian President Hage Geingob reshuffles his cabinet.
To fight the individual members of the board of the Kenya Communications Authority for contempt of court and to cite them to be charged for the, whatever damages the court might award to the three TV stations that have been shut down and are losing a lot of business.
A Kenyan human rights activist, Okiya Omtatah, fails to serve a court order directing the Communications Authority to suspend the shutdown of three television stations.
The IMF issued a press release indicating that the program we have with them is ongoing. And I will be on record to indicate that. Afterwards, in June of 2017, the IMF Executive Board approved a three-year economic program.
And the Sierra Leonean presidential spokesman denies the country's international partners are withholding funds from the government. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Namibian President Hage Geingob has reshuffled his cabinet after relieving two ministers from his government. The two long-standing cabinet ministers have been both ministers since the country gained independence in 1990. Meanwhile, the president has also imposed a month-long ban on all state-funded foreign trips for government and senior ruling party officials. The directive followed the president's call to rein in spending as the administration faces financial problems. To learn more about the cabinet reshuffle and the month-long foreign trip ban, I reach Franz Kapofi, the Namibian Minister for Presidential Affairs in the capital, Windhoek.
There is nothing specific. He just decided that those that he decided to move are moved. And there is not much I can tell us to talk about on that one.
So who got what and who got moved where?
The ministers that were moved are minister from Home Affairs and the minister responsible for youth. Those ministers have relieved of their duty as ministers.
I understand the president also issued a month-long directive banning international travel for senior government officials, including party senior officials, for a month to save money. What was the motivation behind this and why this month and not last month or last year?
Everything has its own beginning, and why not this month? He decided that, look, we are coming from long holidays and we need to look into our interests and attend to the issues at hand before we embark on foreign trips and all these kind of things. But the thing really is that we should also look at our ability to do things, and we should use the money we have to attend to issues at home.
Well, some are saying that he is leading by example by even not flying the presidential jet, but will rather fly commercial flights with a smaller delegation. How significant is this in the drive for him to save the country money?
It is significant indeed, because when it is necessary and when it is possible that he must take a commercial flight, when that proves to be cheap, he will do that. When it is necessary for him to use a jet, when it is cost-effective, he does that. So it doesn't have to be huge millions of dollars that we must, but every little dollar that you save matters.
Well, some people are saying that this is a publicity stunt to portray himself as a savior, including cutting his own salary by 15% and all that. But some people are saying that his security or the state security should not be compromised, and that his decision to fly commercial flights sometimes compromises his security. What is your response to that?
The president is not doing these things to impress anybody. He is doing it in his own true belief that doing that will set good examples and indeed will save money. The other aspect is the presidential jet necessarily does not provide security. Security is provided by security details, and they will be provided wherever he is at any time. So the jet doesn't play any role at all.
How are Namibians reacting to this new directive, the government reshuffle and the ban on international travel for a month? Because some of his critics are saying it should be more pragmatic than that, and that about 42% of Namibians facing food insecurity should come out with pragmatic policies to resolve challenges the people face, rather than what they claim are trying to impress both local and international observers.
Well, people are entitled to their views, but action is louder than words. So those are critics, and I'm not surprised that the critics are saying those things. But what we are doing, all of what he is doing, is aimed at resolving all the problems we've cited.
What is the message here to the people of Namibia with these directives?
It is for the people of Namibia to support the president for whom they have overwhelmingly voted.
Frans Kapofi is the Namibian Minister for Presidential Affairs. He spoke with me from Vintalk. Rights activist Okiya Omtata says he has been unable to serve the court order which directs the Communications Authority to suspend the shutdown of TV stations by the government. He petitioned the High Court contending that the government violated the Constitution by shutting down the TV stations. The government, however, says the television stations, including Citizens, NTV and KTN, were shut down due to security concerns. For more on the court petition, I reach Okiya Omtata in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
So the three accepted service, the Minister for Information, the Minister for Internal Security, and Attorney General accepted service, and the documents were served on them. However, the court process server was detained and harassed at the Communication Authority and eventually thrown out after an ordeal of about 3 hours. Thereafter, he brought the documents to me, and I went personally to effect service on the Communication Authority, but I was not allowed past the gate. Unlike the court process server, who had been allowed past the gate and into the legal officer's office, who, upon seeing the court order, asked to go and consult his seniors before he could receive it, and came back after about 30 minutes, accompanied by police officers, who then proceeded to arrest the court process server, detain him, switch off his phone, and harass him in other ways. So I was not allowed into the premises, and as a result, I was not able to effect personal service on the Communication Authority.
What are the other options of you or the court serving this order to these officials at the Kenya Communication Authority following the orders accepted by the ministries? What are your legal options here?
First of all, service on the Communication Authority in the circumstances whereby the Attorney General has been served, the Minister for Internal Security has been served, and the Minister for Information has been served is really superfluous, because it is one government, and the order was to help the government restore the transmission of TV signals that have been suspended or have been shut down. And so, in essence, the court order is served on the government of Kenya, and the government of Kenya has been ordered by the court to restore transmission of television services. By not being able to effect service on the Communication Authority, I will just try to go the extra mile to ensure that that happens. So if they don't switch on the signal, I'm going to cite them for contempt on Monday. And I'm also going to expand the application to cite the individual members of the board of the Kenya Communications Authority for contempt of court, and to cite them to be surcharged for whatever damages the court might award to the three TV stations that have been shut down and are losing a lot of business. I hear already one has estimated that I've lost close to 30 billion, which is about $30 million.
The government says there are security implications being the rationale behind the decision to switch their transmitters off so they could not broadcast on TV, and that the investigations are not done yet. So why don't you wait for the investigation to be done? Because this has everything to do, they said, with Kenya's security and political stability and ensuring the territorial integrity of Kenya is protected.
First of all, Kenya is a state governed by law, And under the law, we have got provisions for states of emergency. If there's a state of emergency that emerged, nothing stops the government from invoking Article 58 of the Constitution, moving Parliament and declaring the various emergency status and suspending whatever it can suspend. But even in a state of emergency, there are rights that cannot be suspended. And if the government wants to limit the enjoyment of rights also outside the state of emergency, they can do that by legislation. They have got Parliament in session. They could have done that. But nowhere can they arbitrarily suspend rights and arbitrarily purport to be acting outside the law to protect the rights of Kenyans.
As at Friday afternoon and evening, the transmitters have not yet been turned on by the government, despite the order from the court. And secondly, some opposition figures have been arrested because the government says they violated Kenya's constitution. Where do you stand on that?
Well, first of all, the government has got no business defying a court order because the government is a creature of the law. It cannot be above the law. We said that a river cannot flow higher than its source. So the government is a creature of the law and it must obey the law. The disobeying a court order basically tells us, clarifies issues that we are dealing with a wrong government which wants to use force to suppress the people. As for arresting, and I think that the media blackout, the government is looking at the law as an impediment. It is considering the constitution as an impediment to what it wants to do. And whatever that is, we don't know. And so we are going to keep alert, we are going to be vigilant, and we are going to ensure that the television transmission is restored, and we are going to have people cited for contempt. At the end of the day, this power can be deceptive.
Okiya Omtata is a Kenyan human rights activist. He spoke with me from Nairobi. Meanwhile, the three major Kenyan television channels remained off the air Saturday, despite a high court order compelling the government to allow them to resume broadcasting. My colleague Douglas Impuga has just been on the phone with Isaac Ongiri, a senior political reporter for the Daily Nation, a major Kenyan daily newspaper. He is also the chairman of the Political Journalists Association of Kenya. He began by asking about the current situation.
Say it is actually indeed unprecedented because Kenya is known as the hallmark of media freedom in the region. And we are greatly shocked by this. You know, 2 days ago, the High Court issued an order instructing the government to lift the ban, but to date, they have done nothing about it. Despite the government's insistence that they will abide by the Constitution, we are shocked that they are actually not implementing legal orders from the court. So we are a bit disturbed. And already, over and above the blockade on media, on broadcast media in the country, the government is also cracking down on media personalities. There was an attempt to arrest two other journalists from the Nation Media Group 2 days ago, but which was not implemented because members of the civil society and journalists went to the Nation Center to give them cover. And they had to spend a night in the newsroom. That was 2 days ago. So people are worried. There's a lot of panic in the country. The crackdown against political leaders, especially from the main opposition, is also going on. 2 days ago, they arrested one of the members of parliament who participated in the swearing in of the Honorable Raila Odinga. And yesterday, they arrested another lawyer who actually led the oath. And today, they arrested the member for Makadara, Mr. George Aladwa. So a lot of tension in Nairobi over this government crackdown, which looks very unconstitutional.
You say the government has defied a court order to have the TV channels resume broadcasting. What are the conditions? Are there negotiations going on between the media houses and the government?
There is actually no negotiations because after the order was given, the government has been dodging court processes. Who have been making attempts to serve them with these orders. But today, the police commissioner was actually served by lawyers, by a processor from the Royal Media Services. So we expect that they should comply with this order and allow broadcasts to resume.
Now, even if the government allows the broadcast to resume, as most people know, Kenya has been the hub in the East African region of free media and free press. What does this action do to the idea of media censorship in the region?
What this will do is that now there's a lot of mistrust between the government and the media. As what we have experienced in Kenya over the past few days is actually what we are used to seeing in other countries, especially in South Sudan and Uganda. But now that it is creeping up in Kenya. We have a problem because of we are being led by a government with a huge majority. And we expect that given that this is President Uhuru Kenyatta's final term, we'll see a lot of intimidation of the media and, of course, you know, the return of oppression. That is our fear here at the moment.
What's the fate of the threat to arrest some journalists? What's the position right now?
After the members of the civil society and the journalists covered their colleagues on that was on Thursday, the government, through the police, have said that they had, actually had no intention of arresting the three journalists. But we do know that there were plans to arrest them. There was an order to do so. At the moment, we can anticipate that they will be safe because the government appear to have actually retreated over that same issue.
Isaac Ongiri is a senior political reporter for the Daily Nation, a Kenyan newspaper, and the chairman of the Political Journalists Association of Kenya. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from the capital, Nairobi.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
The Sierra Leonean presidential spokesman says the country's international partners continue to work closely with President Ernest Bai Koroma's government. Abdoulaye Barete says local media reports that the International Monetary Fund, IMF, and the European Union are withholding funds from the country are false. For more on the story, I reached Sierra Leonean presidential spokesman Abdoulaye Barete in the capital, Freetown.
We have been handling this economy since 2007. And Dr. Samora Kamara Bialy surfaced as a presidential candidate for the All People's Congress Party in the just about 2-3 months ago. So I cannot see a correlation between his emergence as a candidate to the overall picture of the managing the economy of a country, which we talk about to service about 7 million people. So I think that argument is not only infantile by those propagating it, because as I'm speaking to you, we continue to generate income locally, and at the same time, we continue to enjoy the confidence of our development partners, particularly the World Bank and the IMF, including the African Development Bank. So for us, this is where President Koroma was very clear, that in as much as we are going into elections, the development aspirations of the country must continue.
Critics are saying that is just propaganda because the IMF just released a statement saying it was stopping payment because the government is using the money for campaigning purposes to elect Dr. Samora Kamara to take over from President Ernest Bai Koroma. And so it is with the European Union, who are also pooling funds, complaining about the same thing, not being judicious and not being accountable of the funds that are being pumped into the country and rather being used for political activities.
The IMF issued a press release indicating that the program we have with them is ongoing. And I will be on record to indicate that afterwards, in June of 2017, the IMF Executive Board approved a three-year economic program under the extended credit facility arrangement with the government of Sierra Leone. And the total for that is about $224.2 million. And already I can tell you, because of the confidence they continue to repose in the government, they've even approved and disbursed $53 million to the government of Sierra Leone with direct budget coming back to the Bank of Sierra Leone. So that tells you we continue to enjoy the confidence of the IMF. But suffice it to say that when this issue came up, a rather very poorly published article in the African Confidential, they indicated that the IMF has suspended program with the government. But the IMF came out in less than 24 hours to debunk the story in the African Confidential by indicating in a press release that they still continue to have a program with the government of Sierra Leone, and that so far we are meeting all the economic regulations and obligations under the extended credit facility arrangement.
What is the situation with APC supporters? Because the latest report that came was that when Dr. Samura Kamara was filing papers for his nomination last week, there were people who died. No Sierra Leonean died when other political parties presented or filed their nominations at the National Electoral Commission. Why is it that it was only the APC that seemed, they said, it's a thuggish party, and that this is the same thing that will happen during election time, that people are giving money, drugs, and all that to create confusion just to ensure that the APC wins election? Your reaction?
Well, that is the irony with this. When the other political parties rallied, we told our supporters not to go in there, not to even put on the red, which is the color of the APC. So it is therefore ironical to indicate that during the time of the APC, APC supporters that came out will want to stab themselves or kill themselves, when in essence it should be a merrymaking. So far, the police had arrested about 50 plus people who are gangs that infiltrated the APC rally with a view to disrupt it. But we continue to support the police because they were able to arrest those people. So this tells you, as a party, we continue to uphold the virtues of discipline and law and order. And the president is on record, the government is on record, that this election shouldn't be a question of life or death. When they were doing their rallies, we never went to disrupt. But when they saw the mammoth crowd of Sierra Leoneans endorsing Samura Kamara and the APC as a party, they cannot hold it. So the next thing is for them to infiltrate the crowd with a view to disrupt it. The person that was stabbed was an APC person. So that tells you somebody must have gone there to disrupt, because an APC person cannot be seen to stab an APC person. It just cannot make sense.
Abdoulaye Barete is the Sierra Leonean presidential spokesman. He spoke with me from Freetown.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hey there, this is Shauna Renee, the lady DJ and host of Soul Lounge. Every Sunday at 1400 UTC, I choose an artist that you and I love, and we break down their entire career while listening to their biggest hits. That's what we do here on the Soul Lounge. Once again, every Sunday, 1400 UTC, right here.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, Botswana President Seretse Khama Ian Khama says he will be looking for a beautiful wife beginning April 1st. Last year, the president announced plans to step down at the end of his second full-year term on March 31st. Local media reports that the president wants to begin looking for a wife after he hands over power. The president was quoted as saying he never had time to look for a wife, despite visiting villages across the country due to his hectic work schedule. But the report says Mr. Khama was recently spotted with a girlfriend known as Yarona Sharp. To learn more about the president's quest to look for a beautiful wife, I reached Kialebo Hadihitsu, a Botswana broadcast journalist in the capital, Habaroni.
Actually, we all think it's one big joke here, really. Honestly, nobody's taking that serious here. It's the sort of stuff he says a lot of times. So we are not really thinking serious about getting a wife. Look, we've made peace with the fact that our president is never going to get married. He's leaving office in about 56 days. Look, he's not going to get married.
Kialeboha, last time he came out saying he wants a slender wife. Why does he make so much fun of this?
Look. there's a rumor going around that our president is dating a very young woman, about more than half his age, really. I think the lady is about, she's younger than me. She's about 32 now. She's a well-known lawyer, and she has a twin, and she looks a little bit bigger than her twin. It's a rumor. Nothing has been confirmed whether she is the president's girlfriend or not. But the general view in Gaborone, the capital city, is that she is, in actual fact, the president's girlfriend. But she definitely was a slender once upon a time.
President Khama was once engaged to Dr. Nomsa Imbere. Whatever happened to that engagement?
You probably know that better than I do. We are all clueless. We have no idea. We know definitely that bride price was paid, but we have no idea what happened after that. Generally speaking, in our culture, when you give out bride price dowry, when you give out the lobola, it's expected that she's your wife. So we should be expecting that Nomsa Mbere is the president's wife. She should be the first lady. We don't know what happened beyond that. And it got a little bit complicated. So we have no idea whatsoever whether Nomsa Mbere is still the first lady, traditional wife. But as far as we know, the president is still single. That's why we all think there's one big joke, really, that everyone is actually talking about our president looking for a wife. Because it's either he has a wife or he has a girlfriend, but definitely is he available? We doubt that very much.
Previously, there have been speculations that he was gay, although they were not proven. However, some people have said they've seen him date one or two, or always be in the company of beautiful women, and that his job takes him to a slew of villages and all the corners of the country, and they wonder why the man has not settled down now, 64 years down the line.
Funny as it is, I think it's a little bit disingenuous sometimes to go after the president and suggest that he's probably a little bit gay. I don't think anybody takes that serious. It's one of those things that we wonder about because traditionally we expect a man at 64 to be married. I mean, I'm only 38. I got married 10 years ago. So it gives you a rough idea of the expectations. I generally think we have a gentleman here who has a one-track mind. When he focuses on something, he generally loses track of anything else. That is the nature of a president. He is living in a few days' time. For the first time since he was 24, we have a president who he has nothing to do. Will he make marriage a hobby? I don't know. I'm just saying that in jest, obviously. Look, we are happy that he's living because we are hoping for a very good generation or something. But in terms of his sexuality and his preferences, we are sort of indifferent to it, really.
Kialeboha, he said he also would want to join the ranks of those who have beautiful wives in the country. How are people really taking some of his jokes?
Yeah, generally speaking, they take it as just that, a joke. I mean, it's us journalists who sometimes read a lot into it because it sells papers and it makes people listen to us a little bit more. But generally speaking, the country takes it as just that. It's a joke. He's a jolly chap. He cracks jokes a lot. He plays around a lot. He says stuff he doesn't mean a lot. So if you buy into the stuff he says a lot of times, you find yourself looking really silly because they'll then say, I was only joking. You know, and the feeling we got as media in Botswana is that we just thought he was joking. We let it go, you know, because we are much more interested in discussing his legacy. We think he's a guy who has not done a very good job of running the country. I think for us, that's far more important. But when he talks about these things, we never really know whether he's joking, whether he's serious. But for the most part, we dismiss it. We feel he's joking. I mean, we just want him out on the 31st of May. At least as a citizen, I want him out. I want the next guy to see what will happen. I've been fortunate enough to live through four presidents. So for me, that's something special.
Kia Leboha Dihitso is a Botswana broadcast journalist. He spoke with me from Habaroni. And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
We'll be right back. Whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Another day, another goal. Another day to be a mighty warrior.
Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death,
I fear no evil.
Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death,
I'll be alright.
Yeah.
what's up, what's up?
Switch.
I'm Yuri Tonye, alichonifunza mama, na ndio maana, amuishi kutukana.
Hey, hey.
I'm Yuri Tonye, alichonifunza mama, na ndio maana, amuishi kutukana.
Kila kitu majaliwa, kupata nimebarikiwaga. Nini tilalila, usiku mchana unabwabwada. Kwako mimpira, unanichaza unavyotaka. Kila siku beki leo, kipa nimekudaka. We mwanadamu gani uliyekosa aibu? Wenda kuna kosa nieleze kilicho kusibu. Uishi zogoa zogoa, kila siku zogoa zogoa. Ukilala zogoa zogoa.
I'm Yuri Tunye, alichoifunza mama. Na ndio maana, amuishi kutukana. I'm Yuri Tunye, alichoifunza mama.
Vigenge na makundi mkini ongelea. Eti naringa, nikishinda mnavimba. Hamuishi kuniwinda, Mungu ndo ananilinda. We wanadam gani uliyekosa aibu? Kunisema kwa ubaya na ukiapa kwa Mungu.
Uishi zogoa zogoa, kila siku zogoa zogoa. Ukilala zogoa zogoa. I'm Yuri Tunye, alichoifunza mama.
Sinachi, my loving daughter, Sinachi mo. My baby mama, Sinachi. Tele momo do, Sinachi mo. No be by force to go Dubai. I been a waiting cause the fight. And I just did my own, they love you, yeah. Because you got it in my side. They want to take away my favor. They want to spoil in my career. And they don't say I get the flavor. When you feel taxing na banya. I forgive and I forget. Baba God, he knows the best. My papa just buy his jet. I'm about to take off everywhere. Hey, what's in that tree?
I'm no qua.
What's in that tree?
Money, money.
What's in that tree?
I'm watching.
I go name my first daughter Sinachi, my loving mother Sinachuku, promotion letter Sinachi, Iyawo mi Sinachi. Now we shut him down Malaysia, every show the boy they conquer. Thank you Lord, you showed me love, now I know I'm not alone. I go sing praises from house to church, I go throw party for every town. See my motto, see my mouth, tell me why I no go shout. Not because I suffer fast, not because I pray a fast, not be your show, not be just, oh, what she need. Tell me, oh, Sinachi, I'm no one, oh, Sinachi, one name, man, oh, Sinachi, oh, what she need. Tell me, oh, Sinachi, my man, oh, Sinachi, I be fair, oh, Sinachi, oh, what she need. And I thank the Lord who oversee me. And I thank the Lord for humble smith. And I thank the Lord who give me power. Oh, and I thank the Lord for all the riches. And they pray for house, you give me mansion. And they pray for car, you give me phantom. And they pray for fans, you give me stardom. Oh, you they show me love, you know, be like. Ibo kwezwenu, mbindi giri. Ije my family, Sinachuku. If no be God, where I for there. Forever we go give God the glory. We they travel, they go, they come. Everything we do, they prosper. Because your name not favor, all is by the grace of God. Let the people join the ask. Now would the Baba do the task? Yeah, the Baba do well for me. Now my life become better. Not because I suffer fast, not because I pray and fast. No be your show, no be just. I'm watching. Tell it, what's in that cheek? I'm not quite, what's in that cheek? One name, man, what's in that cheek? I'm watching.
And that was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sally, reporter Douglas Mbuga, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaite, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, an axe does not cut down a tree by itself. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
President Joseph Kabila of the Democratic Republic of the Congo, or DRC, has served the two terms permitted under the country's constitution. It is someone else's turn to seek office. A crisis ensued when Kabila failed to organize timely elections and stepped down. Following negotiations, Kabila's ruling party and the opposition coalition signed the Saint Sylvester Accord. President Kabila agreed not to seek a third term or change the constitution. He would remain in office until the installation of his successor, following elections, which would be held by the end of December 2017. But there were no elections in the DRC last year, nor will any be held until December 2018 at the earliest. And now President Kabila's party is talking about changing the constitution to allow him to run for another term. The president's refusal to step down and the political machinations that have delayed elections over and over again have caused a political crisis, heightened insecurity, and triggered a series of street protests in which scores of people have been killed. On December 31st, the Catholic Lay Coordinating Committee organized peaceful demonstrations where security forces used excessive force against unarmed participants. Another peaceful protest was scheduled for Sunday, January 21st. Authorities prepared for the demonstration by preemptively shutting down internet and SMS services and forbade gatherings of more than five people. When the peaceful protest nonetheless took place, they shot tear gas and live ammunition into the crowd, killing at least seven people, injuring nearly another hundred, and arresting dozens. We condemn in the strongest terms the violence perpetuated by the DRC security forces on January 21st against church-led peaceful protests, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert in a written statement. We are appalled that the DRC government, including President Kabila, would employ repressive tactics and disproportionate use of lethal force against civilians, including religious leaders and children, exercising their democratic rights to call for credible and inclusive elections, she said. The use of lethal force against Congolese citizens and the cutting of internet and SMS services undermine the democratic process, obstruct implementation of the Saint Sylvester Accord, and contravene international human rights norms. We call on President Kabila to hold accountable security force members who fired on civilians or ordered the use of lethal force, and urge him and his government to ensure a peaceful and open electoral process so that credible elections are held as scheduled in December 2018.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
From Washington.